Talk Back with Gary Null, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We call this the Empowerment Hour, because I can promise you that you will learn insights into science, health, healing, the environment, social issues, and hopefully some interesting calls from people in this audience today. I will be taking calls on different topics throughout the hour. I'm going to ask you to hold off from calling so that I can share some insights, and then maybe that will give you something to think about, because I'm introducing something new to our program. Every day, I will set a brief amount of time aside for what I call current issues. I will share something that should provoke some interesting discussion. Then it's up to you to call in if you find the topic of interest or if you have something to say. I'll hold my own thoughts on this. Normally I would do this as a commentary, but I'm very interested in what you have to say about these issues. Our number when you do call in anywhere in North America is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Let's begin. We have a lot to do. I have not used the antibacterial soap because I was aware from my work for almost 30 years in the Institute of Applied Biology as an anti-aging scientist that just plain old soap and water was much better, and it didn't have all the other problems that some of these antibacterial soaps have. But they did a very good marketing program, and they got people to believe that that's what you needed. Well, here's what Ralph Nader has to say about it. Overuse of antibiotics, from commondreams.org. Quote, reading a recent issue of Public Citizen's Excellent Health Letter titled Know When Antibiotics Work, I recalled the recent tragic loss of a healthy history professor who was rushed to a fine urban hospital with a leading infectious disease specialist by his side. No antibiotics could treat his mysterious superbug. He died in 36 hours. Wrongful or overuse of antibiotics has a perverse effect, causing the kind of bacteria that these drugs can no longer destroy. The World Health Organization has cited antibiotic resistance as one of the three most serious public health threats of the 21st century. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, notes that just in hospitals where between 10 and 15% of all patients develop an infection. Well, that means 90,000 people a year die from infections from being in the hospital. And that totals up from 13,000 in 1992. No matter how many national and global health organizations warn about this silent, deadly epidemic, no matter how many officials recognize and define the problems and demands for local and international action, the death toll and the economic costs keep growing. As Dr. Sidney Wolfe, editor of the Health Letter, says, quote, we've known about this problem for and needed solutions for well over 30 years, but almost nothing is being done about it. The drug companies keep pushing these drugs while investing too little in truly new antibiotics that can overtake resistant bacteria. Too many doctors still prescribe antibiotics for viral infections that should not be treated with antibiotics. They don't work. Well, bacteria is one thing. Viruses are another. Antibiotics, yes. They can kill bacteria. Antibiotics, no, they cannot kill viruses. Quote from Dr. Wolf, colds, flu, in the absence of bacterial complications, most coughs and bronchitis, sore throats, except those resulting from strep throat and some ear infections. Doctors say that patients demand antibiotics in part of the culture, but doctors should be there to inform patients. Now, my thoughts on this. Two things. All these antibacterial soaps out there, they're not making your hands any safer, killing any more bacteria than just plain old soap and water. Getting antibiotics for everything that ails you? Bad idea. Remember, you're also, if you're an average American, you're consuming antibiotics in dairy, meat, poultry, pork. And that means that when you do get a bacterial infection, and when you could easily kill it with just a common ampicillin, it doesn't work. Because the bugs are smarter. They've evolved. And now we're dying at big numbers from simple infections, overuse. Not just in giving our children antibiotics for ear infections, but also just how we go about wiping everything down with antibacterial. If you really want to clean the viruses and bacteria and parasites, here's what you do. You take a paper towel. You spray alcohol, just isopropyl alcohol, rubbing alcohol, and you wipe down surface areas. Telephones, pens, computer keyboards, doorknobs, refrigerators, toothbrush handles, water faucets, the things you touch or someone who may have a cold or flu touch during the day. That will kill the bacteria and viruses and does not hurt your immune system. Next up, we've been told young women and young men should get the Gardasil vaccine. I disagree. I reviewed the science behind the Gardasil, and it simply is not going to be lessening, in my opinion, anyone from dying of the cervical cancer. Getting regular pap smears, yes, that does work. But here's something that will knock out the human papillomavirus, and it's not their vaccine. Quote, this is from MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. Coriolis versicolor. What's that? Well, that's a mushroom. And supplements cleared high-risk strains of the human papillomavirus in 39 women over the age of 35 in a year-long Portuguese studies. High-risk human papilloma strains can cause cervical cancer as well as lesions. And all the women had low-grade squamous intraepithelial lesions. Women in the treatment group took 3 grams, that's 3,000 milligrams, of this mushroom extract each day. And 1 year later, 9 of the 10 supplemented women tested negative for the human papillomavirus, compared to just one woman testing negative for the placebo group. So, what's this tell us? This tells us that this mushroom, it's called turkey tail mushroom, quote, has significant antimicrobial, antiviral, anti-tumor properties, unquote, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center website. Did you hear about this? Did you know about it? Good science, independent of any pharmaceutical company, showing us that a mushroom can help prevent cervical cancer in women and knock out the human papillomavirus. No, you didn't hear about it because it wasn't reported anywhere. I go to the original scientific literature every day because I want to know what's going on without the media being extremely biased in what it reports on health issues would have censored that. Why? Because the big push now through the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service is to vaccinate all the women in the United States with Gardasil. A, it doesn't work. B, it's killed far more women than it would ever have protected from that. and yet it's profitable. The vaccine makers have the upper hand. So now at least you know what to do, and it's not Gardasil. Now let's look at the latest on the scientific literature from our medical corner. This is from Dr. Alan Gaby, and here's what he has determined. For women who want to increase your bone mass, and that's a good thing because then you're less likely to have osteoporosis and brittle bones, take oral DHEA. Now, it was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, Volume 89, page 1459. And here's what it says. 55 men and 58 women, ages 65 to 75, were randomly assigned to receive either, in a double-blind fashion, 50 milligrams a day of DHEA, the master hormone, or a placebo for 1 year. And thereafter, all participants received 50 milligrams a day of DHEA for an additional year. And they also received 600 units of vitamin D and 700 milligrams of calcium. What they found is the comments, quote, DHEA is an androgen produced in women, primarily by the adrenal glands, and to a lesser extent by the ovaries. It is metabolized in part to estrogen and testosterone. In addition, DHEA appears to have physiological actions that are unrelated to its function as precursor hormone, including stimulating, quote, osteoblasts. Now, that means that women who take DHEA, and I would suggest if you're over 40 and over, 25 to 50 milligrams DHEA each day, you can increase your bone mass, and that's a major help for women. Also, there's a separate article published in Menopause, the peer-reviewed journal, volume 16, page 907, where intravaginal DHEA helps substantially reduce all forms of conditions that women had. Quote, 216 postmenopausal women, medium age 58, with a symptomatic vaginal atrophy, were randomly assigned either to receive an intravaginal administration of a suppository of DHEA or placebo at bedtime for 12 weeks. Here's the results. Quote, the results of this study indicate that intravaginal administration of DHEA improves signs and symptoms of vaginal atrophy in postmenopausal women without causing endometrial proliferation. Intravaginal DHEA therefore compares favorably with estrogen therapy, which is known to cause endometrial proliferation, a possible precursor to endometrial cancer. So what this means is, a lot of women, starting in some in premenopause, but a lot in menopause and most in postmenopause, the pH in the vagina changes. As a result, you get less secretion of natural fluids, and hence the skin becomes extremely dry and thin, no different than the skin on your face or the back of your hands. That means then when a woman wants to enjoy intercourse with her partner, it's extremely problematic. Even with adding lubricants, the lubricants only reduce but do not eliminate the chafing. So women are very susceptible to literally rubbing their vaginas raw inside, ending up with ulcers and lesions and bleeding and pain. It's a ripping and not pleasant. This shows that you can get back your mucosal secretions, you can keep your vagina from atrophying, something we just don't talk about in the American media. I don't know why, because if you've counseled as many people as I have, and if you've run over 44 major human clinical studies, more than anyone else in the whole history of health and nutrition, major studies with tens of thousands of people total, and you see, in the postmenopausal study I did, 90% of the women said they could not enjoy intimate relations with their partner because of that very thing I just mentioned. That, and one more thing here, flaxseed for cyclical breast pain. This is another one of these major scientific studies. The results were published in the peer-reviewed journal Family Practice News. volume 16, and it's and this is also with iodine for fibrocystic breast changes. 233 women with fibrocystic breast changes, that's lumps in the breast, they took oral iodine, and they had a major benefit in this study. Also, on the group of flaxseed, that was published in Breast Cancer Research and Treatment, volume 64, and it says that 116 premenopausal women, that would be women in their mid-early 40s, with severe cyclical breast pain for at least 6 months, received in a double-blind study a simple muffin containing 25 grams of flaxseed or placebo, wheat-based muffin, for 3 months. End quote. This is the comment section. Flaxseed is a rich source of mammalian lignin precursors, and very similar in structure to tamoxifen. It may therefore showed a benefit from the lignans. So that wouldn't be what I would suggest. If a woman had breast pain, I would suggest Vioxx, vitamin B6 at 150 milligrams, choline and inositol at 500 milligrams. And a lot of people have asked, this is a question that came in, about, well, they hear about beta-glucan. They don't know what it is and if they should take it. Very simply, beta-1,3-glucan is a long-chain polysaccharide. What it does, it stimulates the body's antibacterial and anti-tumor responses. Now, historically, shiitake, maitake, and reishi mushrooms are a great source, but also yeast is a source, and cereal grains are a source. And what it does, when you consume this, it increases part of our body's immune system called macrophage, neutrophiles, and natural killer cell activity, as well as cytokine production, so we can turn off swelling in the sinuses. If you're having a really bad season with allergies, and you're stopped up and congested, it can help that. It can trap a lot of cancer cells and kill them before they become tumors. The cytokines are proteins that coordinate antibody and T-cell immune interactions, and they amplify your immune system. So I suggest taking beta-1,3-glucan as a way of helping yourself, or just beta-glucan. It's really good for you. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. From our issues section, this is a new section where I'm going to share some thoughts from someone and then ask you your opinion. This is from Danny Schechter, a very important progressive voice in the United States. And it's called, Is Fascism Lurking? From CommonDreams.org. It's short, but it's important. Fascism is one of those words. It sounds like it belongs in the past, conjuring up as it does marching jackboots in the street, charismatic demagogues like Italy's Mussolini or Spain's Franco, and armed crackdowns on dissent and freedom of expression. It is a term we are used to reading in histories about World War II, not in news stories from present-day America. And yet the word and the dark reality behind it is creeping into our popular contemporary usage. Radical activists on the left have never been hesitant to label their opponents with this fascist word. Whenever governments support laws that limit opposition or overdo national security or abuse human rights, government paranoia turns critics paranoid. One example, writer Naomi Wolf forecast fascism creeping into America during the Bush years, accelerated by the erosion of democracy. She writes, quote, It is my argument that beneath our very noses, George Bush and his administration are using time-tested tactics to close down an open society. It is time for us to be willing to think the unthinkable. As the author and political journalist Joe Connison has put it, that it can happen here, unquote. Wolf feared Americans couldn't see the warning signs. She said, quote, "Because Americans like me were born in freedom, we have a hard time even considering that it's possible for us to become as unfree domestically as many other nations, because we no longer learn much about our rights or our system of government. The task of being aware of the Constitution has been outsourced from citizens' ownership to being the domain of professionals, such as lawyers and professors. We scarcely recognize the checks and balances that the fathers of our founding government put in place, even as they are being systematically dismantled. Because we don't learn much about European history, the setting up of a Department of Homeland Security," remember who else was keen on the word homeland, "didn't raise the alarm bells it might have. Now those bells are being rung by John Hall, an outgoing Democratic congressman from upstate New York. His fear of fascism has less to do with repressive laws and militarism than the influx of corporate money into politics, swamping it with special interests that buy influence from right-wing policies and politicians. Quote, I learned when I was in social studies class in school that corporate ownership or corporate control of government is called fascism," he told the New York Observer. So it's really the question, is that the destination if this court decision goes unchecked? Reports New York Observer, quote, "The court decision he's referring to is Citizens United, the controversial Supreme Court ruling last year that led to greater corporate spending in the midterm elections, much of it anonymous. In the wake of the decision, Democrats tried to pass the Disclose Act, which would have mandated that corporate donors identify themselves in their advertising. But the measure failed among GOP opposition. Ads from groups with anonymous donors were particularly prone to misleading and false information." Hall said the influx of corporate money in the wake of Citizens United handed the House of Representatives to Republicans. Quote, fascism should more appropriately be called corporatism because it is a merger of state and corporate power. In conclusion, many in mainstream politics who understand that big money can dominate elections, although not in every case, share Hall's fears. In California, two well-known female candidates this past year within the corporate world raised millions of dollars, but they still went down in defeat. So money alone is not the be-all and end-all of a shift towards a red, white, and blue brand of fascism. Other ingredients are needed, and some may be on the way, like an economic collapse, defeat in foreign wars, rise in domestic terrorism, and the emergence of a right-wing populist movement that puts order before justice and wants to crush its opponents. Some argue we have just a movement in the Tea Party, although other critics focus on the rise of the Christian right that promotes fundamentalist politics in the name of God. The Tea Party is not just about one issue. It's not just after Democrats. It has started a campaign against the liberal Methodist Church. It is not internally democratic either, with no elected officers or set of bylaws. It seems to be managed and manipulated by shadowy political operatives and PR firms, financed by a few billionaires who support populism to defang it. Already militias are forming because of fears of immigration. There's also concern that if unemployment remains high, there's likely to be more violence with police forces understaffed because of government cutbacks. The erosion of economic stability with the rise of foreclosures and the shredding of social services is already turning a financial crisis into a social one. We already have sharp partisan divide and inflation of hateful rhetoric with vicious put-downs of the president, condemnations by members of Congress calling him corrupt, even a traitor. According to set of the characteristics of fascist nations, there is a, quote, disdain for the recognition of human rights because of fear of enemies and the need for security. The people in fascist regimes are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need. The people tend to look the other way or even approve of torture, summary executions, assassinations, long incarcerations of prisoners. In place of human rights, enemies are turned into scapegoats as unifying cause. The people are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate a perceived common threat or foe. Racial, ethnic, and religious minorities, liberals, communists, socialists, terrorists, they're all considered the same. And this process is already far along in the USA. Among the classical characteristics of fascism is a shutting down of debate and a focus on the state, which in our country is controlled by lobbyists and private interest. Wall Street and the military-industrial complex have far more clout than elected officials. In the past, during the Depression, there was a plot to overthrow Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It was exposed and neutered. Could something like that happen again? Maybe it doesn't have to. What with hawks already in control of Congress, major media outlets, the military, and poised to slash the power of unions and curb progressive social programs, including public education. Several writers believe that if and when fascism comes to America, it will be packaged in a friendly form, tied to beneficial advertising slogans and public interest messages. It will be sold, 1984 style, as being unavoidable, even cool, and even in our best interest. Your thoughts. That's our issue. Tomorrow, on our program, my issue will be U.S. eavesdropping on the whole world through Echelon, the spy intercepts. It's not legal. It's never discussed. And yet every single phone call, text message, email is read. Everything you say is read. And yet no one is called into task. We will in our issue section tomorrow. Give a call now. I'd like to hear your points of view. I will hold my thoughts, assuming that we're going to get some articulate and interesting people calling in. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And also, tomorrow I'll be doing a classroom on the air, protecting muscle mass as you age so you don't start to see your muscles shrink, and healing the brain naturally. Two separate issues. Now, a girl asks her boyfriend to come over for Friday night. Need a meal. Why? She wants to introduce her boyfriend to her family, which he's never met. Since this is such a big event, the girl announces very boldly to her boyfriend that after dinner, she would like to go out and make out and have sex for the first time. Oh, wow, the boy's ecstatic. But he's never had sex before. He's a virgin. So he takes a trip to the pharmacist to get some condoms. And he tells the pharmacist it's his first time and the girl wants to have sex and he's never had sex. So the pharmacist explains what to do to please the girl and how to protect yourself. And he spends over an hour giving the boy all these sexual input. And then he feels, okay, know what I'm going to do. And at the register, the pharmacist asked the boy, how many condoms would you like? Buy a 3-pack, 10-pack, a family pack. The boy's kind of embarrassed, but he says, I'm going to take the family pack because I think that I'm going to be busy tonight since it's the first time and all. Okay. That night, the boy shows up at the girl's parents' house and meets the girlfriend at the door. I'm so excited for you to meet my parents. Come on in. The boy goes in and is taken to the dining table where the girl's parents are seated. The boy quickly offers to say grace and bow his head. A minute passes, and the boy is still deep in prayer, with his head down. 10 minutes pass. Still, no movement from the boy. Finally, after 20 minutes, with his head down, the girlfriend leans over and whispers to the boyfriend, I had no idea you were this religious. The boy turns and whispers back, I had no idea that your father was the pharmacist. Back in a moment with your calls. I'm Gary Nall in our studio in New York City, which you can watch. We're streaming video live at GaryNall.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. We'll take your calls in a minute. Thank you. I'd like to welcome you. I'm Gary Knoll, and broadcasting out of our station in New York City. Let's go over and say hello to Joe from New York. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Gary. I have a question for you regarding the State Credit Union. I listen to you all the time, and I was telling my husband that I wanted to take all our money out of our bank, our Wachovia, which is now Wells Fargo, and put it in a credit union. And he wants to know, he's going to listen, he wants to know from you what is the difference of keeping the money in a state credit union versus the regular bank, and won't they use it the way the regular banks use our money?
No, they won't. They can't, because the credit unions are really owner. The banks, in large part, are really controlled by the depositors, and many of those are different union groups and individuals within union groups, and they choose not to invest in high-risk, let's say, high-risk gambling. Now, there was a time when banks were of two types. You had your commercial banks, and you had your savings and loan banks. Now, the savings and loan had to have anywhere from a 9 to a 12 time reserve. So let's say if you wanted to loan out a $10, you had to have a dollar, that you actually had the physical money. In effect, banks were very conservative. You had to meet certain requirements. And more often than not, they wanted to know, do you have the capacity to pay back this loan? And so you had something of a relationship. You knew who the banker was. It was frequently someone within your community. And you established that, yes, I can afford this, or no, I cannot. And one of the questions generally asked when you have that one-on-one conversation is, what would happen if you lost your job? How long can you go before you cannot pay your bills? Not just your mortgage bill, which is generally your largest single bill, and then behind that, food. What are you going to do? Do you have savings? Well, the bank knew you had savings because you had savings on account. It was a savings and loan. You would get anywhere from a 2 to a 3% interest, just low interest, and then the bank would take your money. It would take all the depositors' money, and it would then loan it out to people who would give them back a higher interest, 6%, 8% interest on a home, let's say. Or a small business person that might get a $100,000 loan, but they would have to put up collateral. So the savings loan always made sure that you had collateral, so they had collateralized loans from the individual. And then they also looked at the market. What is the likelihood if this business closes? What do we own as a bank? Well, you own a closed business. If it's a franchise, fine, you can sell it. There's value in a franchise, whether it's McDonald's. I disagree with owning a franchise like that, but in pure economic terms, if you're the bank, you want to know, if this guy can't pay, this woman can't pay, how do we get our money back? So there was a lot of rigor in getting a loan. It was a big deal. And more often than not, people had long-term loans. Why? Because the interest was lower. Your payments were lower. And there was very little speculation. In fact, there was almost no speculation. So if you took out a loan for 30 years on your home, you generally had to pay 20, or even they encourage you 30% down. Why? The more you put down, the less you owed the bank, and therefore the lower your payments were. Now, people could put more down because they had a savings anywhere between, let's say, 7 to 20% of their income. They ended up disposable income. They ended up putting in the bank. Now, that's a savings and loan. A credit union or credit savings loan is also controlled and frequently oversold by the people who put it together. It's more like a cooperative. Then you had your commercial banks. These are the banks like Goldman Sachs and Wells Fargo and a Citigroup that would buy companies and merge them in so that this aggregate was greater than the individual part. So let's say if you had 100 different companies you could buy, each one worth, let's say, $10 million, then your corporation was worth that plus how many times it could value its stock in the market, sometimes 2 times, 10 times. In the case of AOL, one time, over 100 times. So if you bought stock, you were buying stock based on a company that was being projected to be worth far more than it actually was. You were taking, it's like watching a drive-in movie. You're watching a movie on an 80-foot by 80-foot screen, but it's just a projection. It's not the size of the actual film. That's what the major corporations did. Now, the major corporations, they had a problem. The money on Wall Street was not made by investing in major corporations in the United States. It was invested in hedge groups, and the hedge groups or the equity partnerships would go out. The hedge groups would take billions of dollars and invest and short a currency and bet that the currency was going to go down. Currency went down, they made a tremendous amount of money. The people in the country had their currency depreciated. They lost money, and a lot of those people were now hungry. Their savings frequently were wiped out, or the value of the dollar they had was worth a lot less. They frequently were stuck with hyperinflation. This happening with George Soros, and I'm ashamed of the left for accepting any money from and inviting him on as a so-called wise person. But then again, I don't believe any of the people at Davos are legitimate people. These are just greedy people, dysfunctional people, in my opinion, sociopathic people, getting together because they're so grossly insecure they want to make money off money. So they don't build anything. They don't establish factories. They buy factories, and they bought factories by the thousands for the last 30 years through commercial banks. The commercial bank was willing to give, let's say, Henry Kravitz or Silverstone or Leon Black or one of these other, Apollo Capital, give one of these groups of people enormous amounts of money because up front they got a 10% fee right up front. No matter what happened, they got their money out. So let's just say that your husband owned a company that had been in business through his family for 100 years. And the company had no debt. In comes these people through the commercial bank, and they make an offer. We're going to give your company, which is worth $100 million in total value, we're going to give you a big bonus. We're going to buy out your if you had stock, and let's say the stock was worth $20, we're going to give you $35. So they bought out the company, but they tacked on an enormous premium. So let's say the whole deal was $100 million, they would get $200 million from the bank. Now, the bank would give them $200 million because the bank right up front got $20 million. They'd get 10%. Plus, they would get non-reserve shares of stock, meaning they wouldn't have to hold it for a year. They could hence pump and dump. The next day, all their potboiler, people would get on the phone calling every doctor and say, hey, there's this deal. The stock is going up. You got to get in early. Got to get in quick. And suddenly, boom, boom, it pumps up. And then they dump their stock when it goes up. So now they've made a second level of profit, the commercial banks, by pumping and dumping and by making a big commission by being a bridge capital financer. They bridge the money because let's say the hedge fund or the equity partnership, they're smart. They'll put up maybe $5 million, $10 million. They'll get all the rest of that money to be put up by Goldman Sachs or Wachovia. But when that $200 million comes in, now they own the company. They take the extra $100 million for themselves. They call it bonuses or commissions. And now they got a company that's now owes $200 million. So what does the commercial bank do? Well, the commercial bank is like a vulture. It doesn't have to grow any food. It eats whatever dies. It's made its money up front. And did it actually have money? Never had to have money. Why? Because they went to the Federal Reserve and to the government and says, look, we want to be able to get money into the marketplace, so we don't want any reserve requirements, minimal. Well, one group, the Carlyle Group, that the former President Bush is in, and as is Baker, his Secretary of his Secretary of State, and also his former Chief of Staff, the White House, They were loaning money at 40 to 1, meaning they would loan $40 out for everyone they had. How they do that? Because, in effect, they have unlimited amounts of debt. And they call debt an asset. But debt is not an asset. Debt is a liability. Do you understand what I just said?
Yes.
But in their world, since they have no downside, none, zero, because if they loan out hundreds of millions of dollars and something goes wrong, they just go back to the Fed and borrow more money at zero interest. So the Fed gives them zero interest money and says, here, let us help you. Let's take some of those bad debts. You know, that business closed, that stock went bad. We're going to take that as collateral and we're going to wash it, clean it up. It becomes invisible. You'll never see it again. Now you got new fresh money. Go spend it. So that's what the banks did, commercial banks. But they also wanted to do this with the money they had on account. And so they got President Clinton and his first Secretary of the Treasury, Robert Rubin. And then the second one that was appointed by Rubin, Lawrence Summers, who became Obama's top economic advisor, and Phil Graham of Texas, they got together and they said, there's one law that's preventing us from doing everything we want. It's called the Glass-Steagall Act. So they repealed it. And by repealing the Glass-Steagall Act, there was no longer a barrier between a savings and loan and a commercial bank. They could do anything they wanted with as much money as they could borrow, which was unlimited amounts of money, and they didn't have to have the old-fashioned, sit down here, what's your collateral, 30% down. And then suddenly everybody started seeing the massive amount of money you could make. You could make money off money. And that's how Wall Street makes it. Wall Street's economy is the fastest growing part of our economy. It's about 20%. So when you see the value of stocks go up, remember, that's a complete Ponzi scheme. $80 billion by average investors was taken out. The big players on Wall Street are the people who are the major institutions and the people that can do micro, meaning nanosecond trading, faster than a human can think or a computer can move, they're trading. And some companies like Goldman Sachs is making a profit off every single trade, 24/7. It never stops. They also are accountable to no one. So if they lose $100 billion, they can borrow $100 billion with no collateral required, terms they decide and no interest. They can then channel that money back, and that's how they make their money. Now you go back to that company, your husband's company that was bought for $200 million when it was really only worth $100 million. The first thing they do is go in there and downsize. Well, we don't need this, and we'll fire all these people. We'll get rid of all those. What do you mean? You're giving people health benefits? Get rid of the health benefits. Oh, you got a pension fund? Everyone's paid into it, you're matching it. We're going to use that because that's now officially part of our pot of gold. And one day, they say, look, why are we making these bicycles in Connecticut, and this factory's been here 100 years? It cost us, between OSHA and EPA standards and with the wages and the union, it cost us $35 an hour, and it's costing us $100 per bike to get it into a store. So the bike then has to retail for about $185. We can go to China, and China already has a factory. Costs us nothing. We'll give them a percentage of ownership. That's the deal. But they're going to be giving us highly skilled labor there that they're supervising for $1 an hour. So we can make a bike, make it in China, bring it back and sell it in Walmart for $60. Hence, we have no competition. Because an American-made bike, American-made car, American-made washing machine, American-made air conditioner, American-made pair of shoes cannot possibly compete with China or India because they don't have unions, they don't have minimum wage, they don't have health benefit, they have sweat labor. They don't allow strikes. In some countries, especially in South America, if you're a unionist, you'd be beaten up and then you'd be killed and your family would be killed. And tens of thousands of unionists, pro-unionists, were killed. So, but what happened was now the companies made massive amounts of profit. But lo and behold, that company in the United States was closed. 45,000 American businesses have been closed since 2000. Listen to the figure I just gave you. 45,000 factories. 45,000 factories. So at one time, America, from the 1940s to the 1970s, we were the manufacturing capital of the world. Now we are the consuming capital of the world. We consume, but we don't manufacture. We're service and consumption. The money we make is made by making money off money. So corporations are sitting on $2 trillion. Why? Because the Glass-Steagall Act. Because now they can deal in derivatives, credit default swaps. They can manipulate the currency exchanges. They can control the price of commodities. Has any oil stopped flowing out of the Middle East from Saudi Arabia? No. From Venezuela, from Canada? No. So we haven't been affected at all, nor anyone else in the world, from the flow of oil? No. Then why did it go from $84 to $111 a barrel? And based upon the amount of barrels that we consume in a day, someone, just by manipulating commodities, made themselves $300 million net profit. That's chump change to these people. So now they took all these mortgages by people who they had liar loans. How much are you making this year? $18,000. What do? I work as a cleaning person over here in Philadelphia in this building. True story. What's the amount of the house you want? $500,000? Wow. Okay, I'm going to put down that you make $100,000 a year. Okay, sign. How much savings you got? None. How much credit card debt you got? About $18,000. So you're virtually bankrupt. Yeah, doesn't matter. I make a commission. The broker I give it to makes a commission. The bank on Wall Street that's loaning us the money makes a commission. We're all making commission. Then we're going to bundle all these. We're going to take yours and 10,000 other people's mortgages. No one's going to see the actual mortgage. No one has ever even seen your house, let alone saw what it's valued at. And if we do need an assessor out there, we're going to lie about it. We're going to pay him or her, and they're going to give us a false value. We're going to bundle all these up, and then we're going to sell them again. We're going to truncate them and sell them to investors who want to make money off this. We can get this juice just refilling over, and we're going to have an endlessly squeezed orange. Okay. Everyone saw it. Everyone knew it. Everyone participated. The Federal Reserve knew it. The Securities Exchange Commission knew it. The Justice Department knew it. Everyone knew that this was a massive Ponzi scheme. Everyone participated because it was to their benefit. If you chose to challenge it, you had to go up against Lawrence Summers. And he's the equivalent of a human Tyrannosaurus Rex. Ruthless and without the single, slightest sense of compassion. He was also the architect of the failed, for the Russian people, the failed privatization programs, succeeded for the oligarchs, failed for everyone else in Russia when they went when they threw off the yoke of communism. So now you're way below your capacity to pay. It would have been with your savings alone, you'd have gone in and say, look, I'm having a little rough time now. Could we renegotiate this? No problem. You're a long-term customer. We see that we trust you. You did put down a lot of collateral, so we're going to readjust this back. Okay, thanks. I appreciate it. Commercial bank, we don't know who you are. We don't care who you are. So now America is broke. It is totally bankrupt, 1,000% bankrupt. We have 240 million Americans living near, at, above, or below the poverty level, 50 million on food stamps, 17 million children going to bed hungry, and not a word about it. Jobs that will never come back because corporate America doesn't want the jobs here. There's too much of a hassle. They want to take it somewhere else where they can make a profit and not worry about unions or rights or benefits. And so they throw up the smoke screen and they turn out the ideologues saying, look, if you're poor, it's because you're lazy. If you lost your house, it's because, well, you shouldn't have owned it to begin with. Mm-hmm. We're poor because we're lazy? And what we need now is Thomas Paine and you know anything about Thomas Paine? Have you ever really sat down and studied their background? Because everything you say on the air, a little surprise for you, they were all progressives. Thomas Jefferson, a progressive. Jesus Christ, the ultimate progressive, because he was a humanist and spiritual. Wow. What's free when you have monopolies? What's free when you've combined all of your different competitors into one so you have a trust, an absolute monopoly, and you restrain trade? Where you work with foreign countries and you take 1.4 million jobs out of the United States and create them in other countries last year. Are you aware that 1.4 million jobs were created by American manufacturers in other countries last year?
No.
That's your commercial banks, not your savings and loan, not your credit unions.
Credit.
You got it?
I got it. So
okay.
When they even talk about your credit rating, that it has to be a certain number. That's
tell them to stick your credit rating. All right? Credit ratings mean nothing.
Nothing.
It's all lies. Everything's a lie. There's not one of these clowns running any of these corporations that could run any small business in the United States, nor any of the politicians. Understand what I'm saying. You could make any human being in the United States, president of the United States, with about a week's worth of coaching. It's all a game.
Game.
All right? Don't play the game. Take your money out of the goddamn banks of these worthless pieces and put them in a savings loan or credit union.
Well, thanks to you, Gary.
And stop shopping at Walmart. Don't be stupid on top of stupid. Every time you shop in a place that's taken away an American job, you're supporting taking away another American job. Every time you put your money into one of these loathsome whorehouses, then you're allowing those people to manipulate and laugh and mock at you. They don't feel your pain, nor does the left on... I tried to get this message. I showed... I'm not even going to get into Keith Olbermann and these people. Anyhow, you don't have friends that are going to be out there protecting you in the mainstream media. Understand that.
Well, thanks to you, all Gary. Right? Tomorrow my money's coming out of Wells Fargo and going into a credit union.
Thanks a lot. Nice to speak
with you,
Joe.
Thank you, Gary.
Al from Long Island. Al, you're on the air.
Thank you. My question is about the Arbitron system. How accurate is it? How does it work? Is it applied to non-commercial as well as commercial stations? And are the ratings available for each program, are they available to the public?
No, they're not available to the public. They cost a lot of money. You have to subscribe to them. You have to sign a contract. We get them because I want to know who our audience is, and they also are very good because they give people diaries, and they give all kinds of segments of the population diaries of all different economic groups and racial groups and age groups and gender groups because they want to see who's watching something and who's listening, and that's why your Arbitrons then tell advertisers, oh, we have a large 18 to 35, which is the ideal group for a lot of advertisers. Others want to, you know, if you want to sell someone, you know, hemorrhoid cream, you want an older female group. That's what the Arbitrons really do. They direct advertisers to which groups of people are watching. In our position, it's telling us who's watching this program right now, who's listening. And the Arbitrons show us that we have a large number of young people from around the world. 52% of the people listening right now are listening outside the United States. These tend to be pro-activist people. They tend to be educated, concerned about issues, concerned about social issues, concerned about their health, and are willing to work towards social change. That's important to know who you've got. Otherwise, you could end up with a Carlton Fredericks audience. He was a health expert back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. He had an old, non-active audience. So what do you do with that audience? They're not going to do anything for change. My audience is proactive. Therefore, it helps me. Hope that answers your question. We're running out of time. I took a little longer with that one, but I thank you for calling in. We'll get to a lot of other issues tomorrow. Now let's go over and say hello to a holistic physician in New York City, Dr. Martin Feldman. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary, and let's talk about magnesium. The audience is very interested in this topic. I got a lot of calls during the week regarding this issue. First off, people want to know about foods that have magnesium, and here's the list. Green leafy vegetables, tofu, legumes, seeds and nuts, and whole grains. Those all have good magnesium content, but you need to absorb it from the food. So how do you tune up your absorption? First off would be your stomach acid. Many, many people out there have low stomach acid, and they need that stomach acid to absorb the magnesium competently. What do? Well, we have zinc, helps the stomach acid, aloe vera, glutamine, cabbage juice, DGL, and sometimes we have to revert to actual acid tablets. But people should not take acid on their own. Betaine hydrochloride could be dangerous. It should be under the supervision of a physician or other healer. Next would be, what about some of the general supplements out there for magnesium across the board? Most of the key for general supplementation involves the muscles, whereby deficiency of magnesium can affect calf muscles, get cramps, eye spasms, endometrial spasm with premenstrual problems or menstrual bleeding problems. But more important than all that is the heart. And many, many people have heart problems, either will have it now or might get them later on, and there's a specific list of what we do about heart related to magnesium as follows. First off would be the heart rhythm. Atrial fibrillation is a problem of the atrium, the upper chamber of the heart, where it fibrillates, it's out of rhythm, needs magnesium. Ventricular premature contractions, they are like palpitations. Ventricular premature contractions, extra beats. Ventricular tachycardia, very, very rapid ventricle, the lower part of the heart, very dangerous. So what are the magnesiums for the heart? Well, magnesium taurine is very, very good for the heart, very important. Magnesium aspartate can be very important for the heart. And also there are other issues for heart, we'll call it heart health. Potassium has to be balanced and has to be supervised. Thiamine, vitamin B1, very important for heart health. Coenzyme Q10, carnitine, and hawthorn. All these are very, very heart healthy. And anyone with any heart problem or even a history of heart in their family, or even the mild, occasional, any of these symptoms, should look at their magnesium levels and see what's going on. And last but not least would be the whole idea of mitral valve prolapse, which is a very, very large problem in America today. And research has shown that a majority of persons with mitral valve prolapse are walking around with magnesium deficiency. And then the last question would be, how would we test for magnesium? And it's very, very difficult because the testing available out there is inadequate. The best thing is really a research tool, ionic magnesium, that's available for research purposes, but otherwise magnesium is hard to test. It's a very friendly supplement, and most people are underdosed, and if you take too much, you tend to get diarrhea, so it's a friendly idea to take your magnesium and see what happens, and you can even move it up toward if you have, once you get the diarrhea cut back.
Marty Feldman, thank you very much, Marty. And Marty can be reached at 212-744-4413. Final thought, just so you understand what I was saying. The savings and loans banks that we have always had historically were not gambling banks. They kept the money within the community, it circulated in the community, and they dealt responsibly. It is the deregulation. It was Reagan who helped deregulate a lot of those, and then it was the Glass-Steagall Act that allowed that line to be blurred, and now people can spend money they don't have from banks, loan it out, and create massive debt. If we were to take all the banks right now, the big banks, the 19 biggest banks in the United States, and if we were to say, on one side are your actual assets paid for with no debt, and on the other are your positions on credit default swaps and derivative positions and debt, every one of those banks would be insolvent. I say, let any corporation in America that is insolvent go through bankruptcy and then start over, learn some lessons, and fire all the people responsible for putting them in that position. That's not going to happen, but that's what I would like. Have a nice day, everyone.